Incorporates a purpose, of course. We're going to set that up. That'll only take a minute or two. And then we're going to do some clarifying of some language. We want to make sure we're on the same page. That'll follow up with some of Gusky's things this morning. Briefly, we'll talk about some problems with traditional grading. You've heard a lot of those this morning. I kind of summarized those. I don't go into a lot of detail, but it'll be a kind of a summary of some of the things that Gusky talked about. Then we'll get into some of the formative assessment pieces about improving learning, and that'll incorporate two particular strategies. One will be no surprise, but it is an effective approach. The other one is a unique approach that I came up with that really works well third through high school. K-2, that's what I'm trying to wrap my head around, because there's some other issues at K-2 as we think about kids learning in the classroom without marks and grades, because we can get away with so much complying at K-2. So more about the third through 12th grades, and we'll get into that strategy in a little bit of detail. And then we'll talk next steps and resources. Now, just so you know, this presentation is not uploaded. Before I leave here today, we'll get it uploaded. So you'll have access to the couple of links that are in here as well as the slides, so you won't have to take any notes on that. So, two purposes. One, got to provide some evidence that formative assessment process can be used to motivate students to learn without grades. How does that look? You're going to specifically hear from some students that have, they're going to talk about their its impact on them as learners and how they feel about not being graded with the work that they're doing and how it motivates them. We'll jump into that a little bit so you can directly hear from some students. And then a couple of strategies that are going to be overt, and then a couple that are really built into the components of the formative assessment process and the FAME project out of MDE. A lot of different entry points for strategies to move in this direction. So one of the unwritten takeaways is this idea, and you'll hear me talk about this, is different entry points for educators to begin this process to move their students away from a traditional base grading, that I've got to have this grade in order to learn, to that intrinsic so-called motivation, to more intrinsic, so that they see themselves having purpose in what they're learning and how it is connected to a grade in the end. So it's a little bit of a hybrid approach, and I'll make that clear as we go along. And so, again, two specific strategies, one that's not obvious, the other one that's going to be new to you maybe, and then several different entry points as we talk about formative assessment. So, as you think about what you walk away from, this being a very brief time that we have together, there's your learning target for today. What are those components that can be implemented to move in that direction to help students be in a classroom, see value in the work that they're doing, and work for it to learn and not for the grade, okay? But again, a little bit of a hybrid, and I'll explain that later. Gusky said this in one of a recent article I read about his, is what's your purpose of grading? If it's to select talent, then we need to stick with what we're doing and separate them out. It's about developing talent, which I would assume we're all there. It's about all students, wherever they are. It's extremely important that you're aware of this because it does influence how you move forward. What was really interesting about what Gusky said in the breakout session, any of you attend the breakout session? Okay, just a couple of you. There was a significant thing that really impacted me, which was interesting because I found it to be true in the practice of helping districts move forward in this direction of motivating students with formative assessment and doing their work without grades per se. And that is, he said that you would think that the belief has to be first. And you'll notice in the description I have, if you believe it too, right? What they found in the research is that when educators begin to practice something and they change their behavior, then they see the impact on students, then their beliefs and attitudes follow. And to me, I thought, wow, I was kind of thinking going into this, we really have to have people believe it first in order to change their behavior. And he said, nope, the research is pretty clear. if you give them things to specifically do, practices, and they change their behavior to try stuff out, and they see the impact on students, they see outcomes, the attitudes and beliefs follow. And so I'll point this out, and I think it's significant as if we think about developing talent. That's kind of one of those things that we focus in on all students being successful, right? So we're developing talent wherever students are. That means that if it's about developing talent, the main reason for grading should provide feedback. Should be providing feedback. That is not new. Those of us who've been in education in the last 10 years, the amount of literature that has come out about feedback and the impact on feedback, there's a plethora of it. There's a bunch of it on how it's very highly impactful. Now, it's the quality of the feedback, right? We got to think about the quality of feedback. It's not just feedback. So that's part of this process in the informative assessment. It's a key piece. Let's think about some clarifying language real quick. Park on this for just a minute to make sure we're on the same page. Notice the idea of marking and scoring, or mark or score. When you mark or score something, a number or letter could be some kind of symbol, right, that indicates some type of performance that may impact a grade later on. So something occurs during learning, it's marked, it's scored. The key piece is it better be based on criteria for performance. Rubrics, right? So the student can go back and know where they are in their performance. But it's some type of mark. Doesn't impact their grade, so you mark it and score it. Now, why is this significant? Well, as you talk with your colleagues, as you talk with your staff, talk with people in your district, the language you use is extremely important. You've got to make sure you have common knowledge about the language you're using. Grant Wiggins and Jay McTighe, when they were developing Understanding by Design, they looked across the literature in the United States and said, how do people define curriculum? They found 83 different definitions. 83. So the key is, it's not that you have the exact definition. In some cases, that's important. But with some of the educationese, like mark, score, curriculum, what's a lesson, what's important is that you and your colleagues have the same definition and you're using the same language. So the same thing here. That's why this is important. So when you use the term mark or score, we think that some people might interpret that as putting a grade on it. Nope. It's just about providing some level of feedback tied to a rubric, and it's a letter or a symbol or something. Okay? But the student can go back, whatever that mark is, and that mark has meaning to them where they may fall on a rubric. All right, next one. What's a grade? A letter or a number that is an indicator of summative performance. And again, based on criteria for performance. Now, as Guskey talked, part of our challenges is we're moving from a traditional system where there's a bunch of stuff that goes into a grade, which we're going to take a look at in a minute, and moving towards criterion-referenced performance, rubrics, right? And we're all in different places with building those and putting them in place. So that idea of a grade, end of summative, right? Now, if you say, well, is this going to be graded? This is where this impacts. This is one of the strategies. We have to change our language with our students. If we're in the classroom with students and go, is this going to be graded? I say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, do I get a score for it? Well, you're definitely going to get feedback on it, definitely. Yeah, you'll know how you performed. You see the shift there? It's subtle, but you have to change the language in your classroom with your students because it's moving them to wrap their head around what's happening. Because they want to know, is it going in the grade book? Well, absolutely. This will eventually impact your grade at some point in this course because all the work I give you is valuable, tied to the standards, and it will help you in your final performance. You see the shift there? Now, not all students at first are going to buy into this. It takes time to win them over. And I got a specific strategy that has worked several times with teachers I'll share with you before we leave. Last one. Hopefully all of you are familiar with this. Now, the acronyms at the bottom are a challenge, where they come from. Chief State School, Council of Chief State School Officers, formative assessment for students and teachers. State Collaborative on Assessment for Student Standards. This was their official definition of formative assessment, adopted by the FAME Project in the state of Michigan. There's some key pieces to this. I think we're closer in the day and age with the idea of formative assessment. I think we're closer to having a common understanding across the state, but there's still pockets of areas where there's not an accurate understanding of what formative assessment is. There's still some areas, even in our county, where we have some people that are saying it's a test. No, it's a process. It's a process, not a test. This definition is very, very important in reference to thinking about how formative assessment is implemented, and when we're thinking about having kids perform in the classroom and actually grapple with content and skills, practice those skills without being given a letter grade. Now, they'll be given feedback in reference to some performance criteria, absolutely. But how do we get them to believe that and follow through and work without a grade? There's some things that we can do. We'll come back to this one. All right, as you heard this afternoon, this morning, there's some problems with traditional grading. Quick review. Let's just refer to his work, right? Pop this one in there, right? There's only a couple of you went to breakout session. You should listen to it. There's some good stuff in there, some really good stuff. He did kind of a Q&A, and there were some things that came out. All right, so here's a graphic. I don't know the source. I picked this up several years ago when we were doing the work. All the stuff that goes into a grade. Ton of stuff. And there's a couple of ways that I describe that he didn't use this language, but it gets to the same things that he talked about. It's a private practice right now for the most part. Individual teachers decide that stuff, right? No, my arrow moved. I was doing so well. This is more tricky than I thought. There we go. He indicated this idea of the 100% scale being subjective. I remember working with some high school and middle school staffs and bringing this up and them not believing me and wanting to kick me out. And I took them through an exercise that Bob Marzano, when he came to Genesee ISD, he presented to us and gave us the materials. And Guskey referred to a similar exercise that he does, that you can take any crowd of educators and have them lay out how they would grade a particular assessment given on some questions, and you will get a range like you would not believe, from failure to 80, 90, 95%. You say, how can that happen? Because it's very subjective. A couple of other things. It's demotivating and lacks incentive. Remember he referred to the spread? As soon as you're in the hole, you're in the hole. It's hard to get out. Really, really hard to get out if we're just focused on a grade and not about the learning. So it perpetuates extrinsic motivation. It perpetuates it. This idea, I got to get a grade. I got to do what I can to get it. In the end, and he referred to this too, what does that grade mean then? Does it really report anything to the parents, to the student themselves about what they're learning or not learning, or what skills they're able to perform? We've got to move in the direction, and he talked about laying this out, and in the breakout session, he provided some ways to move forward in separating these things out and working with districts to make this happen, which is kind of a hybrid approach. You don't jump from traditional to standards-based. You can read all about the problems across the country. He provided kind of a hybrid approach. And one of the things that has to happen is that a final grade for that academic course only be derived based on academic things. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have other categories of things that you think are important to measure of students, but in regards to the academic standards tied in line to the proficiency levels tied to standards, that grade should only refer to that. You should be able to back map it through, right? So that's not happening. But the problem is with districts, if you say your academic grade has to be tied to the standards that have performance level indicators, is anybody working on performance level indicators for all your standards in every subject? Whoa, that is tough work. To take a unit of instruction in every subject and lay out performance indicators, not only for that unit, but also for subsets of learning within that unit, so that you would have 2, 3, or 4 levels indicating what performance would look like and be like with the content of that course. That's a lot of work. So that becomes one of the problems with traditional grading, if you shift in that direction immediately, is being able to have a staff work through their courses with their standards and being able to write those performance level indicators. That's tough work and it takes time. It's very good work and it really helps you understand your content really well and what performance looks like for all of the subject areas, but it's tough work and it takes time. So with all of the challenges, and I just touched briefly, kind of highlighting some of the things that Dr. Guskey referenced, there's 2 entry points that are promising, okay? And one's not a new one, like I said, so don't dismiss it, because it's been working with some districts. And then the second one I'll go through in a little bit of detail. First, the book studies start the conversation. Book studies are not new. The problem with them is to have a driver that really drives that book study, and that it's done in a timely fashion so that busy people have a time to build that into their schedule, and someone's driving the conversation when you facilitate it, providing different options for people to talk about that content. So we're not going to spend any time on that one, but I'll suggest 3 books you might want to look at. And then secondly, implement the formative assessment process. Now, implementing that formative assessment process can take a lot of different shapes. I'm going to give you 1, how teachers can start immediately in the classroom, 3 through 12, that has worked for some. Won't work for all. I'll tell you up front, it's not going to work for all. And you could take the idea and modify it. And you'll have it in writing, by the way. But it's tied to starting with the formative assessment process. So here, first of all, here's the 3 books I recommend. Obviously, Dr. Guskey's book, On Your Mark. Anybody familiar with Ken O'Connor's work? Raise your hand if you're familiar with Ken O'Connor's work. Okay. Guskey will kind of give you a lot of big picture stuff and give you some specifics in his book. It's pretty good. If you want to get to specifics in dealing with late work, zeros, extra credit, laying things out, 15 fixes will do it for you. Okay? Myron Duick will provide some very specific things in dealing with some of those 15 fixes. I think he gets to all of them. I haven't mapped them side by side. I'll have to do that. That's interesting. But Myron's really good for the classroom teacher when they say, how? You've told me this. I want to try it. I don't necessarily know if I believe it, but how do I do this? For example, Myron came up with the idea with retakes. And you've probably heard of this. The idea of applying for the retake. You apply to retake an assessment. And once students know that that application process involves filling out a form and indicating and providing feedback as to why you didn't perform well on that assessment and what your plan is to do before you retake the assessment and an estimated time as to when you'll be ready to take that assessment, and that assessment has to be scheduled with the teacher. You see where the responsibility goes? Myron Duick reported after a year of doing that, kids said, I don't want to mess with that, man. I'm going to be ready for the first time. But the kids who were serious about it, even your high flyers, they had an opportunity. There was a way they could correct their mistakes, or maybe that day didn't go well for them. And most people, well, I don't have time to do all that. Well, you know what? If you explain it and share it, kids will step up to the plate and be motivated to get it done the first time, to not have to go through the process. There's other multiple things that go along with that, but that'll give you an idea of grading smarter, not harder. Those kind of approaches, very, very easy things to do. They take time to implement, but once you're up and running, pretty efficient, you know, takes time for a little bit to get them going, but once you're going, they expedite learning in the classroom. So those are the 3 books. That slide will be in the presentation, and you'll be able to check those. All right, formative assessment now. Digging a little bit deeper. There's our definition again. How many familiar with the FAME project? Okay, several. How many of you have a coach in your district that went through it? Okay. So those of you who are not familiar with FAME, there's the URL that will be in the presentation. I would recommend that. Kim Young, who was in this room before, she heads up the project. Applications for next year's coaches to be a part of that program are going to go out in about a month, she said. And if you do not have someone in your district that has gone through that, I highly, highly recommend it. I'll talk more about that in a minute. This particular definition is what drives that whole program. Notice, it's planned, it's deliberate. Teachers are going to have to adjust how they go about doing things, which means if we're going to motivate students to complete work without a grade, it's got to be intentional and planned. It's going to slow things down a little bit, but it's going to speed things up later. It's ongoing throughout, and the key to it is the evidence that is generated from whatever you do. You've got all kinds of tools and strategies to generate evidence of student learning. Lots of different ways. That evidence is used by the student and or the teacher to improve learning. From the teacher's point of view, they obviously change their instructional tactics. The student changes their learning tactics, right? It's only formative if the data is used. You'll start to talk to teachers when you look at the components and just, oh, I do that. Yeah, I do that. Yep, I do that. And you say, well, tell me, how about you do that? Well, we collect exit tickets. Great, great. What do you do with those? Well, I collect them and I kind of look at them and, you know, just get the kids to write stuff down. But what do you do with the data? Are they tied to a standard? What are you looking for with that particular ticket? How did it relate to the lesson you just had? Are you using it as a precursor to the next day? Or is it, you know, you see, they think they're doing it, but it goes back to using the data. If the data's not used to adjust instruction, and if the student's not going to use that data to adjust what they're going to do to learn differently or learn more, it's not formative assessment. That last piece, self-directed learners. That happens, but it doesn't happen overnight. We tell teachers, and when we do a four-day institute, it takes about three years to become comfortable implementing most of the components of formative assessment. But there are things you can do immediately to start the process. Here's the FAME website. You can go to that website. That's where the application will be made available. You can apply. Here's the bottom line. Anybody in your district who applies, if they're accepted, what they agree to is that they're going to act as a coach. They'll go to a launch with a team of teachers that they have identified within their district that are willing to work with them throughout the year, meeting about once a month, that they gather for about an hour or so, and they talk about formative assessment. And the idea is to begin that process of implementing formative assessment. They learn together. The really neat thing is your coach from your district has the opportunity to be trained in some things that cost a tremendous amount of money that the state of Michigan pays for. Number one, they have an opportunity to go through cognitive coaching training through Thinking Collaborative. Anybody familiar with Thinking Collaborative cognitive coaching? Good, a handful of you, yes. If you're not, it's life-changing. It is life-changing, and it is powerful, very powerful. And that's 8 days of training paid for. Normally, that would cost you, it ranges, depending on number of people, the ISD, if it's supplemented, anywhere from $500 to $1,000. Adaptive schools, four-day training. It's about collaborating together, really getting an understanding of the human dynamics and idiosyncrasies of people, and how do we use what we know about people and the things that we do to increase collaboration and reduce the normal human problems that we have. when people interact, right? How do we do that? How do we expedite collaboration? That's what Adaptive Schools is about. Probably another $500 worth of training paid for by the state of Michigan. The FAME project is an entry point for your district to learn and continue that. It's in its third, fifth year cycle, and this started under Dr. Martineau, because one of the key pieces is this, the research, right? It was Dr. Martineau? Martineau, thank you. I saw you look. I wasn't always there. Okay, Martineau. And here's the thing. He knows what the research said. Or says, I should say. It is very, very powerful that if done well, you have the potential of doubling the rate of learning. But there's a lot of components. And that's why the state of Michigan has invested in it three times. And we're in the fifth year, the third cycle of 5 years. And I think it was just funded for another 5 years. That's how much the state believes in it. Okay, so here's the graphic organizer for the formative assessment they put together over a period of time. It went through a few renditions. There's some entry points here that really move students towards learning without a grade. You'll notice the three questions across the top. Difficult to read, but it's the whole idea that sums up formative assessment. Where are we going? Make it clear. Where are we headed? It's the first question. Number two, where are we now? And then thirdly, how do I close the gap? Now, this whole learning target thing that blew up, and people were initially, when it came on 10 years ago, people like going, we've done objectives for years. How are these different? Here's the key piece. The research behind formative assessment, just taking learning targets alone, which can impact students to learn without a grade, is making clear what the end is. See, we're moving from a system that it's a gotcha system. It was just, your kids didn't know where we were going. What's the end goal? Now, the formative assessment process, because of the research behind it, says, hey, if you're upfront about where kids need to be in the end, and you make that clear and they can articulate it, you're going to expedite their learning, because what you've done is opened it up for students. You create clarity about what the end goal is. That's just with the learning target piece. You'll notice that planning's on the outside. Okay, so as you think about taking a couple strategies I'm going to talk about in just a minute, and think about that, it takes some planning initially to build those pieces in. Notice the color coding. Where are we going is about learning target use and clarity. That middle question, where are we currently? That's where you're eliciting evidence of student learning. That's where getting kids to grapple with the content and the skills and practicing them. The key piece there is that motivates kids to work without a grade is tying that performance to the summative. That means teachers have to look at every assignment they give kids and ask themselves, what does this do for them? Is this a worthwhile assignment? Is it really tied to the standards? And when they're performing, how am I building in those feedback loops? And what does that feedback look like? Because what happens then, if students know, wait a second, you're not going to give me busy work? Nope. Everything I give you gets you ready to perform at a high level. And you know what? If you don't perform, if you're not working out right now, that's okay. That's okay. That's part of the culture, part of the language, part of the safety in the classroom that we develop. But you got to sell the kids on it, right? But that green piece is all about where are we now? How are we doing that? What does it look like? How close am I to those targets? And that's then where the formative feedback comes in. During that process, those kind of interchange, because that feedback's throughout. It's not at one time at the end. And then decisions are made. We go back to those learning targets. Where are we? How are we doing? And it cycles back around. Notice the students in the center. During our four-day institute, we emphasize this over and over. This will start the conversation. If you start to tell staff that the assignments you give kids are not to be graded, and we have districts across this country and in the state of Michigan still, you got to have formative assessment score in your grade book, and it impacts the grade. That is a complete no-no. Because what it does is it ruins the accuracy of the final grade, because that's practice. It's practice. Why should a student be penalized for practice? This will start a conversation with staff. One of the things that we did with districts in Genesee County to help them move in the direction of changing their grading system and getting students to be motivated intrinsically is we started a conversation with the staff, literally at a staff meeting. We showed them the 100% scale was subjective. And boy, we had pushback. But what we said to them is, hey, we're just starting to talk. It's okay. We're not changing anything this year. This is about you guys being able to make adjustments. We want to show you. We're going to have this conversation throughout the year. And once the staff knew, oh, no big changes coming right now, and you have a lot of input in it, you have a lot of choice in what direction and how fast we go, but you got to first wrap your head around it. We're going to give you specific things you can start doing, and we're going to use the formative assessment process as a starting point. Districts were able to front load and be proactive and have less of the fallout with their parents and teachers inside because they went slow to go fast. And part of that had to do with starting this conversation while formative things that happen in the classroom are not graded, so they had to change their language. Yes. Couple of things right there. The language you want to use when a student completes a task that's going to create some evidence, there is some marking and scoring that goes on and some feedback so that student can know how well they're performing towards a learning target, correct? Okay. If we want to evaluate the student's work habits, responsibility, that is outside of an academic grade, which means the district goes on, like Guski talked about, and says, hey, we're going to have a separate category in a report card, and we're going to make it, that's how important it is to us. A lot of times districts will identify 4 or 6 soft skills they think are important. The key piece is, and you really have to have some conversation with staff, is to say, well, you say it's important to teach responsibility. What does that mean? What does it mean to be responsible? Because you have these arbitrary deadlines, but I'll tell you what, there's many deadlines I've changed on my job. I talked to my son who works at Ford. They've changed deadlines all the time. It's about communication. So this whole idea that we're forcing down kids, oh, deadline's it. Well, sometimes they are very important, yes, but not always. So let's get realistic about that. So once you put it in writing and write the rubric, and you start to market that amongst your staff and your students, that's a separate category that takes time to develop. Yeah. So yes, the answer is yes, but it has to be outside of the academic. All right, so here's a strategy I referenced. I wrote an article for ASCD Express, and this came out of a teacher that we were working with in Effective Grading Practices project. And he came out to see Ken O'Connor, and I've worked with this teacher for a long time. He finally said, Roy, I can't do this anymore. I'm not doing this traditional grading. I got it. He said, I think I get it, but then I don't, and I'm not sure how to move forward, and how do I get my kids to do this? He said, I just can't tell them and change it. I got to figure out how to do it. I said, all right. So I've shared with him this idea, and it's kind of a 5-step process, and there's some pieces to it, and you can get access to the article that kind of lays it out. It is a flexible process itself, but here's the first step, is the teacher says, I've got to select a high-stakes assessment, okay? It's the first step. Could be a unit assessment, could be a semester assessment, but they select it. Within that assessment, they pull then 5, could be 6, could be 3. The idea that I say 5 is not the key thing, but you want a number of questions directly from that assessment. Okay? The questions that you select that you're about to show your students, you need to make sure they're tied to standards. You also have to make sure those particular questions map backwards to specific assignments that you give them to grapple with the content in practice. Okay? So those are some key elements. So you take your high stakes assessment, take 3 to 5 to 7 questions, make sure they're aligned to standards, make sure that you have assignments with those questions, okay? And you, as you're planning this, you get those assignments together. You get them together and get them ready to share with kids, okay? Now, part of this, as you move forward in introducing this, is there's a little bit of theatrics with it. So you know yourself as a person, if you're doing this in the classroom, teachers can kind of bring their own flair to it. But there are some things to do to play this up. And this second step is you're introducing this new system that there's no homework and assignments are not graded. Now, if you're in a system where it's very traditional, you're going to have some mixed reactions, right? Mixed reactions. You go, so I don't have to do any homework. Well, I didn't necessarily say that, but we'll talk about homework. Well, that means I don't. Since the assignments are not graded, I don't have to do them. No, I didn't say that. That's possible. That might happen, right? So you just kind of let this sink in. And you say, here's the deal. There's going to be a new system. And from now on, we're not going to have this whole idea of homework and just giving you busy work. I'm getting rid of the busy work. I'm not just going to give you stuff to do it. I don't do that anymore. But what I am going to do is every assignment that I give you is going to be worthwhile and help you perform on the final test. Whatever the test is, unit assessment. So let me show you this. So you put up the 5 questions, right? We'll say 5. And you literally show them the questions. And you show them, go, these are on your next unit assessment, or these are on the midterm, these 5 questions. And they're not going to believe you. Like, those are the 5? Yeah, you can write them down, you can memorize them, okay, do whatever. These are going to be on your test. Just take a look at them. And you might want to cover a few, right? You say, now the key piece is, can anybody answer those? You might play a little time with that. What do you think about it? They may not know. You say, well, here's the deal. I've got to get you there. I've got to get you to respond to those correctly. And by the way, they could be constructed response items. They don't necessarily have to be multiple choice. It could be a next generation assessment item of some sort. But the idea is that they're sitting there going, wait a second. You just showed us 5 questions, and you told me I could copy them, and now you're telling me there's no homework and things aren't going to be graded. What are you talking about? And say, well, here's the deal. The assignments that I give you, every one of them that I give you, that you have a learning opportunity before you, is practice to get ready for the big tests in the class. And along the way, if you don't perform well on it, I don't want you to be penalized. Because that's a new concept to them. You say, wait, I don't get penalized when I'm wrong? No. I don't want you penalized. I want you to learn from it. We've got to figure out where you are. So you're not going to be penalized for your homework if you don't get it done. You're not going to be penalized if you get things wrong. Here's a key piece, though. What's going to be different is those assignments you're going to find worthwhile because I'm not giving you busy work, but you're going to get feedback from me, your classmates, maybe from other teachers. You've got to get feedback on those assignments. And every one of them are going to be tied to the assessment. Let me show you an example. So the next step is you explain that the final grade that goes into class are summative scores only at the end of learning. Now, this is where a teacher has to figure out in their class, if I'm moving from a traditional system to a more standards-based system, what's really going in with my grade, okay? So what I tell them is, if you're in a situation where you're not doing a district initiative and you're kind of still a lone ranger, you have some flexibility. You don't have to have a perfect system. Do a hybrid, okay? So you may still count some extra credit. You may have some other things in there, but take out the homework and let them know it's still going to be put in the book so I know you did it or didn't do it, and we have a mark for it so we know what your performance level was, but it won't affect your overall grade. But if you don't practice and do the work, it will affect the final grade on the test. So if you're going to come into my class and go, well, I don't have to do the work because he didn't grade it, I don't have to do it. Well, guess what's going to happen? You're going to get that summative assessment, and you're not going to be able to do the retake because you can't apply for it because you didn't do any work. Because I'm going to ask you, where's your work that you did leading up to the assessment? And I'm going to have a record of it. So the choice is going to be yours, because that's, here's a benefit for some of you. If you look at the stuff and you get it from what we're doing in class and you don't need to do the assignment, but you're ready for it, great. It's up to you. So the key is then, you got to make sure they understand the inputs to their final grade. So that's step three. Step four, then you get into this and you say, look, we're going to talk about learning opportunities. We're going to change our language. It's not assignments. It's not homework. These are learning opportunities, and every one of them are going to tie to the summative assessment. So when you get handed those, in fact, let me show you some of those right now, and then you hand them out. And you give kids a few minutes to have conversations among themselves, and you hand out a couple of the assignments. You say, take a few minutes and look at these and tell me what the relationship is to these five exam questions. See if you can figure it out. Give them some time, walk around the room, let them talk. And hopefully, if you've done your homework and planned correctly, they're going to identify, well, I noticed this question asks about this one piece, and it looks like right here you have a whole section here where we have to really dissect, whatever the case is, right? They start to see the connection. So you move them forward saying you're only going to have learning opportunities. And there'll be time to get feedback from me and your fellow your classmates on how well you're performing on those learning opportunities. And if you perform well, it's an indicator how well you're going to do on the summative assessment. And then explain all the learning opportunities receive feedback but are not graded. That's what it says under the piece there. Now, the teacher that I referred to that actually did this, the first one out of the gate, he did it, he started it in the spring, and then the fall, he started it at the beginning of the school year. And we had some conversation and about doing it at that time of year, at the end of the year, and then starting it again. And he noticed some changes and stuff. So he came to me in November. We had a social studies leadership meeting. He goes, Roy, man, you're not going to believe it. I said, what? He goes, it is working so well. He said, my wife loves it. I said, what do you mean your wife loves it? He said, because I'm not grading all the time. He said, I do more work in my classroom doing individualized teaching because I do less stand and deliver, because I've changed the design of my assignments, because they have to all be meaningful to the summative assessments. So I got rid of the junk, and kids are working together in the classroom, and I'm doing more individual teaching, and I'm not grading anymore. I'm giving all my feedback to kids in the classroom. My wife loves it because I was grading papers all the time. He said, a huge change, huge. And he said, the interesting thing is, I've noticed a number of my students who are your C and D kids, that they just kind of come in and they do it and they don't, there's that motive. He said, scores are going up. Attitudes are changing. He said, I'm blown away. Had a couple other teachers do the same thing moving in. Now, this teacher, Ryan, he's got some formative assessment background as well, and we've been working with him on that. So there's some of that going on too. But this idea to move their students to wrap their head around getting rid of the grade tied to an assignment and why you should be doing assignment, it's kind of a hybrid though, right? Because in the end, they still see that all the work they do, in essence, it is graded, but it's on the summative. It's just not during practice time. So if you click on the link, once you download this, you'll notice there's an ASCD article. If you search my name, ASCD Express, it'll come up, but it'll lay out the five steps in a little bit more detail, and you can follow it there. And it has been one of the successful strategies to move in the direction to help kids complete assignments without grades. Now, other entry points as we kind of wrap this up in looking at formative assessment where this comes in, because that is formative assessment, that last strategy, not grading any of those assignments, right? And being more deliberate in planning your assignments so that there's feedback. So in the FAME project, this is the chart, the 13 components that is covered in their manual that a coach in a district would have conversation with colleagues or other teachers about implementing formative assessment. So on the left-hand side here, you'll notice the three questions. Where are we going? What does the student understand now? And how do we close the gap? Across from each one are the different components. So planning, learning target use, soliciting evidence of student understanding, formative feedback, instructional learning decisions. So the entry points to move students forward, the key piece is feedback. If you want to move kids in the direction of completing assignments, you've got to teach them about what feedback is on their own performance. Much easier to do at the K-5 level than it is 6 on up, because just of the nature of kids. That's true. The secondary level, you've got to figure it's going to take months for them to actually start to change their behavior. But you also have to set them up to fail. Not intentionally to fail, but you've got to expect it. The teacher that I spoke about, we had the conversation. I said, expect this to be rough and bumpy and kids to fail, because they're going to not do it. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to buy into the system. Sure enough, that happened. He had a high number. He goes, what if there's a bunch? I said, hey, you just plan for it. Just know that it's going to take some time to map that up. But I tell you what, whether you have 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 per class in 6 sections, those kids are going to learn you mean business. They're going to get it, because now they have to automatically apply for a retake. And they've got to go through the steps, and they're going to be self-realized, well, had I done the work, had I practiced and paid attention to that stuff, I may have performed better. And he said, the lack of performance from students has dropped over the years. And he thinks the number one thing is the feedback he's giving on a regular basis and the language he's using with his kids, the idea, don't worry about failing. Let's just try this stuff. Let's just try to figure it out together. I'm going to give you feedback. That safety net there, that they're not going to be penalized, is moving them forward with that safety. And you know Maslow's stuff. That's a key piece, is that safety. So the entry point and one of the strategies that helps is individuals studying this idea of feedback and all the assignments that they give students, and that feedback being descriptive, so you get the student to do the thinking. You respond with something that is doable by the student, and you don't overwhelm them. So don't try to fix everything at once. And if teachers learn how to do that on the spot, but also in small group and whole group delivering that, the students start to catch on. What this teacher noticed is that kids would check in with him with a plan already ready. Hey, Mr. Epperson, hey, I was thinking, you know, with this fiscal policy stuff, I know I didn't get this correct. What I'm thinking is if I go here to this source, I probably can get this. Can I retake? Yep, you're all set, go. You're going to talk about intrinsic motivation on some of your average kids. That's what he's seeing. They're coming in realizing, wow, it's not about me, you know, getting the grade. It's about me figuring this out and being ready for the summative assessment. And I've got a way to do that. I've got resources. He's opening up the door because he's practiced feedback with them so much. But they're willing to check in, right? So as you get into the FAME project and take a look at their work, you can go to their website and look at their materials, and I would recommend getting someone to apply and bring that to your district, not only because of the trainings, but you start the conversation and working in small groups. You will move people in the direction of rethinking how they have kids perform assignments and how they sell them on the idea. And it works. It does work, but it takes time. All of these are entry points, except really planning's about getting the other stuff in order. We're already doing learning targets. The problem is we got those slapped on the board, and they're a check-off. Yep, see, I got it on the board, and then I've gone into classroom doing linking walks, and it's on the board, and you talk to students, and you record student engagement and things that are happening. You go, it's on the board, but I don't see it here. Like, so it's a compliant thing that teachers are doing. And what I tell teachers, if you want to start moving in the direction of getting kids to be intrinsically motivated and work to get the work done, make the end clear. And that's where our learning targets comes in. And people think, now I'm delayed in getting my instruction done because I got to go over the learning targets. No, you've already started teaching by going over your learning targets because you're talking about where they need to be. You've already started teaching right out the gate. But making it clear is one of those entry points. So we could spend more time on this, but as you dig in, you'll see with this that each of these components is an area which allows different entry points for teachers and administrators to move in to work in their building, to start to implement formative assessment, help people wrap their heads around the concept, and work in areas that are comfortable to them. Start giving choice to staff on how they approach implementing formative assessment. The resource itself is the FAME project. Real quick, I want to show you, have you listen to a quick clip of a student response to this work. This is about 2 minutes.
Assessment for Learning is a system that I use in my class that allows students a penalty-free chance to show what they know or what they do not know every few days.
15 questions. There are 3 to 4 questions on each target. So if you know them, you should see them represented 3 or 4 times each area.
It does not go into the gradebook as a grade. It is merely feedback. It allows me to guide my instruction so that the students who understand are allowed to move forward. The students who do not understand are allowed remediation. We work on bringing them up to the point where they understand what they need to at that section. And again, it's penalty free. The students enjoy that because they know there's no reason to cheat. There's no reason to do anything other than see where you are. And then from there, you'll get the best possible assignment that you can to help you to achieve your learning targets and achieve the understanding of that indicator.
If he teaches us that it's fine not to get it right the first time, as long as when we do it again, that it's better than last time.
I like it. You feel good when you get the quiz because you know, no pressure, just going to do a quiz. You're going to find out what you need help in. I actually look forward to taking the quizzes because I myself don't really ask that much questions. So when I take the quiz, you don't really have to ask that much questions. You take the quiz, he points out what you're doing wrong. So I love taking quizzes in this class. That's a first.
Instead of me trying to get done with it just because of the points, I truly take my time on it and then complete it, make sure I learn something. Like my other classes, sometimes the work that are worth points, I just rush through them just to get my points in. But in his class, I take my time, do the work, and then learn from it.
So those are directly from students and how they feel about it. So as you think about leaving here, book study is one place to start. As a strategy, the book studies have to be about the grading process and formative assessment. There's 3 in there that'll give you some thoughts. That is a very effective strategy. However, somebody's got to drive it. Somebody's got to drive it and be intentional about it and facilitate those conversations and have regular short times to check in, have conversation around them. Number 2, learn formative assessment. Begin the implementation, look at the FAME project. In and of itself will move all of your students in the direction of intrinsic motivation and willing to work without grades. There's some setup and some things to do. Within that is the link to the article of the strategy that I gave you that works at the secondary level on how to get kids to start thinking about it and taking a summative assessment and back mapping that to your assignments. And so they see value in the assignments and letting them know, I'm getting rid of the junk. No more busy work. All the work I give you is going to be meaningful to get you to perform at a level that you're going to really find pleasing in the end because you're going to be ready, penalty free. And only give descriptive feedback on all assignments with no grades. Not only, I maybe should have rephrased that, but when possible, give descriptive feedback where you get the kid to do the thinking, short things that they can deal with in a time frame. You don't have to fix everything at once. Sometimes you have to go the effective route, which is good, which means you tell the student the next step. But slap on a grade doesn't help them at all, right? We know that. So I don't know how you're feeling now. Could be any of those, right? You guys are tired, aren't you? Been a long day. So, we had one question along the way, but yes.
What would you say to an administration that required a certain number of grades in the gradebook every week?
I would ask them why. Do you know the why?
Yeah.
Yep. Immediate feedback. I should be able to get on my phone and look at where my kid is right now. How come you don't have those grades done? Yeah. What I would say is that the correction of that, the idea, the why behind it is really good. Okay, we want our parents to be informed on performance. But to require a certain number of grades, if it's about informing the parents, then does it have to be a grade that impacts the summative score? Can it be some type of mark or score that has meaning tied to rubrics that the parents know, here's where your student is right now? So at the end of the week, on a set of standards, they could go in and go, okay, they're at a 2, but I know, because if it's on the website, I went to the open house, or maybe I didn't go to the open house, I didn't go to the website, but my kid brought home a handout that explains what that means to me. Because then the parents are informed. So that's how I would respond to that. I say, if your why is to keep your parents informed, that's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. But we also have to put it on the student's responsibility to keep their parents informed. And that can happen by a score that has meaning but doesn't impact their final grade. Until it does, until it's a summative assessment. Yes?
Describe your example from a history classroom. Has it been like a math classroom or an ELA classroom?
An ELA, middle school, social studies, high school, a few of them. No math. One science that was a colleague of this other guy. So I'd have to look on the math. I'd have to say no to give you a straight answer, no. What are your thoughts? They're not learning on their own. The idea that they're completing assignments, say doing math problems, and it not being graded per se and ending up in the grade book. Yes, I know of teachers doing it, yeah. I thought you were referring to the strategy that I used. Oh, in general? Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, there's pockets. But the idea in a math class that kids are willing to do assignments and have that choice of themselves, how many of these problems do I have to get to understand this concept and not doing it for a grade? And so if it's like my son who read through his calculus class and Guski, that's exactly what happened. Oh, you weren't out in the breakout session. My son took calculus. He didn't have to do any. He could take the test and get them done. He didn't get it from me. But he scored a C in that class because he didn't turn the homework in. And he aced every test. Crazy, right? So it helps those students, but it also helps those students who might take more. Guski made the point of what we know about students is that they learn at different rates. Aptitude isn't about whether you can learn it or not. Aptitude is about how fast you can learn it. That's the point he made. I was like, oh, that's interesting. So yes, it's happening in math classrooms, yeah. Probably could get you some specific teachers to talk to if you want to pursue that, to have that conversation, which I think is a great thing. We can connect with Kim Young and say, Kim, and she can connect us those, and you can email, call those teachers. I bet you there's some that would love to have the conversation with you. Yeah. I think we're at 15:15, right? In fact, we're a little bit past. Thank you for your attention. I appreciate your time. You guys enjoy the rest of the conference and have a great evening. Snow is not supposed to be as bad tomorrow because there's a front coming in from the north keeping it south of us, so we're only going to have a couple inches down here. A little bit further north, it's even going to be less, so should be okay, but there'll be snow, just not four, seven, 10 inches of it. Only a couple. Yep, thank you. Where am I? What's happening?
You going back to me?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks for stopping in.
You got it.
You can send your critique to me via email.
I'm going to start with the music. It's a really good rate to start with.
It's like 70s on 7.
It was great.
On what?
70s on 7, my Cirrus, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I'll see you Sunday night online.
Yep.
Okay. I want to introduce myself, but also to beg for your help.
Yes.
I am Liz Seidbacher. I am the Social Studies Department Chair. You don't know me.
Okay.
I am the Social Studies Department Chair for Michigan Great Lakes Virtual Academy.
Okay.
But I happen to live in Flint.
Oh,
and
you do?
We have close to 200 students this year in grades 3 through 11 who need to do.